When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We're going to some strange places today, folks. We're going to the very heights of global wealth. There's some interesting statements that came out of Davos. We're going to some very dark places related to the ongoing invasion of Ukraine, but not in the way you would expect. We're also touching on the horrifying stories of serial murderers. And before we do any of that, shout out to all our conspiracy realists in the crowd, many of whom are artists. You have written to us and talk to us in person about the ongoing conversation regarding art and ownership and artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence.
Huh. Yeah. Well, we're kind of at this point now where the rubber, as they say, meets the road, and that usually comes in the form of lawsuits. We've been talking about this stuff for a while now as to, you know, how these fun little kind of curiosities, like generating yourself a cool, cartoony avatar, or one that looks like you're in Lord of the Rings or like a Greek god or whatever, is super fun and everything, but also how you're essentially paying for the privilege of training these AI algorithms with what was the one that was doing the little guys? Lenza. Yeah, Lenza yeah. Was a big popular one, had a big moment. A company that's been around for a while, but only has really kind of started to make waves with this rash of just, you know, virtual selfie posts that have been. I actually learned about it from super producer Alexis, codename Doc Holliday, and asked her what the thing was called. And she told me, and I immediately fed it all kinds of information and pictures to get these cool images. One for me, one for my kid, and one for my kid's mom. Only to be told by a very savvy friend of mine on the show, Matt Riddle, that, hey, buddy, FYI, be careful with that stuff. You're basically just paying for the privilege of training their AI. So when you're training an AI in terms of like image recognition, feeding it actual photographs, that's one thing. But the aesthetics that these AIs are generating are often trained with actual art, with actual stuff that's on the internet from folks like friends of the show and illustrator of the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know book, Nick Turbo Benson, who actually did one of these for the rapper Killer Mike, and actually was very shocked to realize that the aesthetic that the thing spit out of Killer Mike looked remarkably similar to an image that he generated. You know, he created, generated. He's a human. He created an image of Killer Mike for some Run the Jewels materials, poster or a t-shirt or something like that. And this is not uncommon. This is being noticed, you know, across the board by artists saying, hey, the aesthetics of some of these things like Midjourney, DeviantArt, which has an art generating algorithm, Stability AI, and others, eerily similar to some stuff that I've done or my colleagues have done. And we know that a big thing about these, as you've mentioned several times, Ben, is specificity, whether it's, you know, like a chat bot, like GPT chat or whatever. It's about saying something in the style of, with lighting similar to. So it really is all about giving it information that it can kind of ape, you know, like whether it be actually in the style of, say, an Andy Warhol or maybe R. Crumb or some artist like Jean-Michel Basquiat. You can do that, and it does that. But how does it do that? It does that by looking for examples of that artist's work. And while those are big names, and many, you know, like working artists aren't going to have names that big, but the nature of being a working artist is that a lot of your stuff, whether it be through clients that you've had over the years or, you know, examples on your website of your work, that stuff is out there on the open internet. And that is the kind of information that these algorithms are scraping to feed their generative capabilities, you know, for this stuff. So we talked about lawsuits. There is a class action lawsuit accusing Stability AI, DeviantArt, and Midjourney of violations of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DMCA. I'm going to read a little bit from an article on Kotaku detailing some of the allegations. The lawsuit alleges direct copyright infringement, vicarious copyright infringement related to forgeries, violations of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, violation of class members' rights to publicity, breach of contract related to DeviantArt terms of services, and various violations of California's unfair competition laws. Matthew Butterick is one of the lawyers representing the class. This is a case that was filed in San Francisco court. And it's super, super interesting because the chatter kind of is, you know, this could set precedent for or against the interests of these artists, right? Because if it's struck down and it turns out that this is not, in fact, copyright infringement, and then they're not actually being ripped off directly in a way that's protected by law, then these artists are, forgive me, shit out of luck. And they're going to have to take a whole nother tack here. You know, we've talked about the interesting aspects of AI art, using it in conjunction with humans that generate art, you know, as sort of another tool. But when you think about a lot of the things, for example, these types of portraits that we're talking about, a lot of artists make their bread and butter doing these kinds of portraits at comic cons or what have you, you know, with fan art, you know, of various characters and things that they sell to make money. And this really does, you know, if someone could just feed a couple of pictures into an algorithm and generate something for $5, why would they pay an artist $500, you know, to do something? I mean, I have answers to that. It's a hypothetical question, but, you know, it is a question nonetheless. And there's a lot of people that won't pay the $500 that would rather just have the neat, you know, avatar for a couple of bucks. Stability AI and Midjourney are probably two that you may have heard of. Midjourney is probably one of the crazier ones, where a lot of interesting artists are using Midjourney to create kind of weird psychedelic, you know, sci-fi landscapes and very interesting things that maybe don't exist in the world. So you may have seen these kinds of images posted. A lot of them are actually being animated. There's ways of using this AI stuff to generate these morphing kind of animated images where you obviously, like, lots of images were combined. They're kind of morphing from one to the other. And it's got a certain look to it. You can kind of tell right away that that's what you're looking at. DeviantArt, on the other hand, has been around for a long time, and it's more of like an art kind of community and portfolio for artists. But it also has an algorithm or like an AI art generator thing that it's been pushing out. So this is, you know, naming all of these companies in this class action lawsuit. So that's its own thing. And that's interesting because, again, if the suit does not go the way of the artist, then this could crack the gates wide open for even more of this kind of thing. To say, oh, it's not actually stealing anybody's intellectual property. It's just using things that are freely available on the internet, and it's determined that the work being generated are completely unique. Whether or not you would argue with that point or not. Another, I think, even more interesting development here is that Getty Images are also suing, because we know Getty Images is a very litigious company. First and foremost, you have to license their thousands and thousands and thousands of images, and they are not cheap. You know, they go to just about every, you know, step and repeat kind of red carpet event. So there's tons of celebrity images, tons of archival images, all of this kind of stuff. And they are, you know, stock photos is what they are. They are suing Stability AI, or accusing, I don't think the suit's been filed yet, but a press release came out before apparently Stability AI was informed officially of the lawsuit. And they say, I'm just going to read what Getty Images has to say. Getty Images believes artificial intelligence has the potential to stimulate creative endeavors. Accordingly, Getty Images provided licenses to leading technology innovators for purposes related to training artificial intelligence systems in a manner that respects personal and intellectual property rights. Stability AI did not seek any such license from Getty Images and instead, we believe, chose to ignore viable licensing options and longstanding legal protections in pursuit of their standalone commercial interests, to which Stability AI told CNN, "We don't know anything about this. We're hearing it for the first time in the press, and we find it a little odd. That's how we heard about it. Quote, we're still awaiting the service of any documents. Should we receive them, we will comment appropriately."
And they did, Getty Images, in their official statement over on their newsroom, they did confirm that they have commenced those legal proceedings. So they are underway as we record today. And this, what's funny about this story, Noel, is it reminds me, Matt, you probably remember back in the day, we had to, when we were a much smaller, scrappier outfit, we had to have these serious, like, family dinner table hard conversations about how many photos from Getty we could afford to use. Yeah. And it got acrimonious at times.
Well, because our company wasn't huge, but it was a big enough company to where we paid a certain amount of money for a certain number of images per month, mm-hmm. right? Per pay yeah. period. Yeah. And we had several video shows in production. So Ben and I at the time would have to say, oh, okay, look, we've got this episode coming up on the war on drugs. I think we're going to need, I'm estimating 7 images that we need from Getty. So if we could please have those. Mm-hmm. And that's how it would go, because we would have to pay for each one of those images that we licensed to put in our video.
Why does stuff they don't want you to know get all the thumbnails? Yeah.
Well, to your point, Matt, is I don't know the answer to this because I've never really had to mess with this too much. I imagine the licensing fee you pay depends on the size of your audience and also the use of said image and how long it's going to live and in what medium it's going to live.
It gets a little different when you're dealing with larger accounts. So for a company like at the time, How Stuff Works, that had multiple shows, multiple things going on, it's tougher to like estimate an audience. So I don't know exactly what happened. I wasn't high enough. Ben and I were not high enough in the company to know exactly what the, you know, contract looked like at the time, but that's certainly the way it functioned. You pay for a certain number of images you license, and they're perpetual worldwide licenses. So they last forever anywhere. But dude, if you go on Stable Diffusion's website, look at their FAQ, and you notice that there's a direct question on here. What is the copyright on images created through Stable Diffusion Online? This is the Stability AI generator. And their answer is, images created through Stable Diffusion Online are fully open source, explicitly following under the CCO 1.0 Universal Public Domain Dedication.
What a great time to be a lawyer, a leaked conspiracy yeah. realist. If you're on the Getty case, tell us what kind of boat you're going to buy.
No doubt, because this really is like Brave New World kind of territory. This hasn't been dealt with. Mm-hmm. This is when this will be decided one way or the other. And y'all, I ask to you both, any ideas as to why Getty might not care for this big picture?
Well, sure. Yeah, they've converted their the images that they make people pay tons of money for into public domain fragments, right? Mm-hmm. They fragmented them into public domain, I don't know what you'd call it.
Instances, you could call it. How about that?
But wouldn't you have to show, though, that it was like literally here's this face from this Getty image? I mean, I would hope that Stability AI would not be so stupid as to have it be like a cop cut and paste mishmash of Getty images. The idea is that it's creating a new face out of a bunch of other faces, and you can't tell from the end result what went into it.
That would be like the fair use argument, right? I am altering your thing. I'm making it new by using parts of it.
But they don't even know which images were used to feed the particular output. There's no way of tracking that, to my understanding. You know, maybe there is, and maybe they could request that. But that also might be a moot point, because it doesn't really matter what goes into it if there's no recognizable portion of the original in the end product.
That's a solid argument. But let me also advance just a very off-the-cuff freestyle conspiracy here. I would say that it'd be very helpful for Getty Images to have a bad guy or an antagonist to fight against, because they have tons of lawsuits against them for something like 47,000 photos, and the photographers who took
against
those,
Getty.
Against Getty.
Okay.
We're asking Getty.
I don't know about this. This is fascinating. Yeah,
for compensation, they're saying, "Hey, can you pay us because you're using my work?" Right. And I know you guys know about licensing, Getty. So run the jewels for me. Right. Cough up my slice of the pie here. There was a $1 billion lawsuit from a photographer named Carol Highsmith. And this dates back to 2016. I don't know if any of these things have been resolved, but I'm just saying, like, Getty is a huge company. They're a huge force in the field, and we can't confuse them with some kind of shining paragon on a hill. It's just weird to me that they're getting accused of some of the same stuff they're accusing this other thing of, in a similar way.
It's the pot calling the AI kettle black, you know? I mean, no question. And honestly, too, I mean, they have a vested interest in defending or at least fighting against this technology just lock, stock, and barrel. Because if you can just type in keywords and generate a copyright-free stock image without having to license something, that's a huge part of their business that's gone. You know, Shutterstock, who's a Getty competitor, they've leagued up with OpenAI, which is the company behind DALL-E, and also the AI chatbot ChatGPT. So they're thinking ahead because they know it's inevitable, I would argue. Shutterstock's also a newer, you know, more kind of like with the times company. Getty's been around for ages, and they've got legacy skin in the game. So I think they're kind of looking out for their best interests in terms of like slowing down the spreading tide of AI image generation.
One of the biggest parts of Getty's, I don't know, the reason why they're used so much, I guess, is because they have those creative images, which were the ones we would use for our show often, but they have a whole other set of images which are meant for journalism purposes. Mm-hmm. So
that's a different portion. I mean, they couldn't, that would be a whole nother thing about right to publicity and all of that stuff. If like all of a sudden you just generated an AI image of a celebrity that never actually took place, that celebrity could then sue you. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I mean, it's brave new it's brave new water and a brave, it's real deep water in a brave new world. That's the way we say it. But keep my stumble in there at least partially, Doc, because that's what makes us human, right? Or that's what makes us appear to be human. Two big notes, I think we should say. This current legal beef, at least from my understanding, is taking place in London.
Yeah, the
UK
Getty one.
Laws apply rather than the US laws. It's legal to scrape the web however you wish in the US.
Oh, man, there's so many things to discuss here, and let's keep it brief. And I think we definitely have another update for this stuff coming in the very near future. And I do want to just close, Ben, by referencing a thing that you found where we just mentioned ChatGPT. It's like not image generation, it's text and content generation. And somebody apparently sent the Australian incredible songwriter, singer, artist, Nick Cave, some song lyrics that ChatGPT had generated in the style of Nick Cave. And he had a thing or two to say about it that I think you could apply across the board to this stuff. I understand that ChatGPT is in its infancy, but perhaps that is the emerging horror of AI, that it will forever be in its infancy, as it will always have further to go, and the direction is always forward, always faster. It can never be rolled back or slowed down as it moves us towards a utopian future, maybe, or our total destruction. Who can possibly say which? Judging by this song, quote, in the style of Nick Cave, though, it doesn't look good. The apocalypse is well on its way. This song sucks.
I recommend reading the full Nick Cave letter. And Nick, if you're listening, nice, nice one.
We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor and then be back with some more strange news.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
And we have returned. Quick heads up, folks, if you are listening with family members, if you have kids in the audience today, you may want to fast forward about 15 minutes or so. The following story may not be appropriate for all listeners, but it caught our collective eye. The war in Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine, continues apace. And sadly, here in the West, a lot of people are encountering some degree of fatigue about it, right? You probably find yourself reading fewer stories about what's going down. People can just kind of become acclimated to the most terrible stuff, the most terrible news. And we see this happen all the time. Part of the reason it's such a problem, at least in the U.S., is because of the way the news cycle is designed to maximize advertising. It's true. Sorry. You may have heard our earlier episode on a mercenary army that is completely, totally not officially a part of Russia's military. It's just run by a close friend of Vladimir Putin. It's called the Wagner Group, and they do a lot of things that ordinary or official armies would not do or should not do. And recently, as the war and the invasion have continued, have dragged on, and have even escalated, the Russian state has encountered a ton of problems. It turns out that the Cold War legend of the great dangerous Russian army may have been largely a legend, at least embellished. The technology is old. A lot of it's not working. They're making some what appear to be very basic mistakes that ordinarily professional military simply would not make, like unsecured comms, really day one stuff. And you guys heard about the conscription fears and all the Russian men of possible conscription age trying to get out of the country.
I've heard this, and I've also, the conscription fears, because they're leaving because they're worried about being sent off to the Ukraine front, correct? That's what we're saying.
Is this like being drafted, or is this different? They're already drafted. They're just like dormant, essentially, and they'll be like called into action or activated, as it were.
Yeah, they're fleeing conscription or being drafted. The phrase that you'll hear to describe this is called mobilization. So, several times Putin has come out it's come out in the news. They've been taking folks who are not, normally soldiers by trade, and just like the U.S. did in Vietnam, they're drafting them. So as this, this was happening in 2022, but very toward like the end of the year, especially
Ben, I would
September.
Say it's been tough for me to know how much of that is propaganda on the Western side. Like, look at them. They're even getting their prisoners to go and forcing these people to fight. I don't know how much of that is.
Really good point. I felt the same thing.
Just, it
really
feels like something you would say, right? If you were doing information warfare.
Sure. And I think that's a really good point. But we have to note that per Russia's own reporting, over 200,000 people were already drafted into their armed forces by October of 2022. So a lot of people were trying to leave. And at the same time, the Russian state is lowering its standards, right, for who can be accepted, who would qualify. You know what I mean? You see this happen in a lot of militaries in the past. And the Wagner Group, do please check out that episode, because it is disturbing. It's a very true story. But now these big variables lead us to this very disturbing thing we want to talk about. The most prolific serial murderer in Russia is a guy named Mikhail Popkov. He is alive. He is in prison. He was called the Angarsk Maniac, the werewolf. He is serving two life sentences for the murder of 83 women. And this includes later confessions he gave after his arrest and trial and imprisonment. And these are women who were between the ages of 18 and 50. They were tortured, then murdered in horrific ways. And then he defiled their bodies. This happened probably between 1992 all the way to 2010. He said that he was doing this because he wanted to, quote, cleanse the city of prostitutes. His words, not ours. And because there have been some deals allowing criminals or prisoners, people on the wrong side of the law, to join the Russian military in exchange for a pardon, Popkov has put his name in the figurative hat. State television interviewed him recently, and he voiced his desire. He said, look, I was a conscript in the Red Army back in the day. I have experience with radio and electronic equipment. I would like to join the Russian military in the invasion of Ukraine. And the thing about this situation is he's not making some crazy pitch, some crazy insane pitch. 40,000 convicts have been freed for serving in the army. And that's to the point about propaganda. That's a number we were also able to confirm.
Wow. I don't know. You guys tell me what you think. In my mind, if you are going to have a frontline force that's meant to be a force wedge that pushes into areas, right? And like clears out areas, secures them. You probably want some of the most hardened, dare I say, bloodthirsty individuals that you can possibly find. Like, that feels like smart strategy to me. They also have to be competent enough to understand and follow orders, right? And then carry out like pretty sophisticated tactics. But I don't know. Is it weird that I feel like having like Suicide Squad style crews going through on the front lines might not be the worst idea?
No, I think it's a terrifying proposition, but it seems like smart maneuvering. Is this a real possibility?
Unclear. That's why it's kind of at a crossroads, because, you know, to the point about the Suicide Squads, it would depend upon the nature of the crime, would it not? Now, for someone who is a proven necrophile, for someone who is proven to have murdered not because they were, you know, attempting to steal food to feed themselves, or not because it was a matter of self-defense. For someone like that, we also have to consider the other ethical angle. Even if they are being treated as cannon fodder by the Wagner Group, which seems to be the case, then is this not letting them out in the wild to do the thing they enjoy again?
I think that's exactly what it is. I'm worried, I suppose, that it feels like a good strategy to them. Does that make sense? It feels
it's like the inmates are running the asylum kind of situation, right? Where it's just like, let the floodgates open, you know, big worst case, you know, I don't know.
It matches with the horror stories that are coming out of Ukraine right now, where battles are being fought, right? And the aftermath that we discussed on the show previously, when the Wagner Group and other groups, you know, leave a town after it's essentially been sacked, and the horror stories of the exact same kinds of things that were that this guy did, I suppose.
To be fair to the Russian side of this equation, we do need to point out that he has not received an official statement from Russia. The Russian media, you know, the state media was allowed to show this interview, but that's not the same thing as them allowing him to join the front lines there. He is older. He is 58 years old. Like a lot of these monsters, you can't trust what they're saying. They might make grandiose statements, so we don't know too much about his specific military experience. Not that that matters in this case. We do know he was a police officer, and as we've seen in similar cases, he used his official position to further enable his crimes.
I mean, it's not like Putin is fighting much of a PR, you know, war. He's already kind of, you know, emerged from the situation looking kind of like a supervillain. So is there really much of a leap between what his image is now and how this would tarnish it further? Right. I don't know.
No, it's a good question.
Hypothetical.
It's a good question. And the only reason this guy is alive right now is because there's a formal suspension of capital punishment in Russia. And, you know, unless you run into the wrong window, it seems that the third story windows of Russia have become a little bit more dangerous than the courts. Maybe we can do an episode on that. But this gets me because, you know, war is so fun. It's such a fundamentally horrific thing. We hear these stories sometimes about people who are on the wrong side of the law, trying to help the public good as a way of reducing their own sentence, right? Or getting better circumstances in incarceration. I'm thinking about convicts fighting wildfires, for instance. And those convicts out west in the United States have no doubt saved lives. But where is the line here? You know what I mean? Especially knowing these forces are encountering civilians in Ukraine.
I feel like this guy is the titular line, if not way, way over it. You know, you don't get a nickname like the werewolf for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And especially considering that He was able to elude law enforcement for 20 years, probably because he knew some of the standard operating procedures from his own time working in law enforcement. So this is someone whom, if they get out, they could stay out. It'd be kind of hard to catch them if they got a chance, if they got a chance to ghost.
And now, forgive me for not fully remembering exactly how Suicide Squad worked. Wasn't that sort of a secret program? It's not really something you'd publicize, right? Because you want them to be able to be disavowed if they're captured or killed or whatever. It'd be more like a black op. So publicizing doing this probably not be smart. It would just be the doing of it, and to have that, but then kind of do it, you know, on the low low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know. What do you guys think? Is there a benefit to publicizing it? I would think not. I'm just wondering. This is obviously the guy who's running his mouth saying, "I want to do this." Mm-hmm. It's not the same as, you know, Putin saying we've decided to start a program that's going to release all of our most hardened psychotic criminals from prison to fight the good fight.
I mean, if you can survive in a gulag out in the hinterlands of Russia, then you have become a very dangerous person. So there is salt to it. You could see a psyop edge to it, you know, announcing a very different version of this, like how Inglourious Basterds, in that heavily fictionalized World War II thing, their existence became or took on a psychological aspect because people were terrified. In DC's Suicide Squad, some of those villains have superpowers. If someone had a superpower, you would definitely, to your ability, conscript them. But those Suicide Squads are operating on pain of death. It's kind of like in various military conflicts in ages past, you would put the people who were inept or didn't want to be there as the first wave sometimes, and you would have the real fuck around and find out people right behind them ready to kill them if they turned around.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, even some of those Suicide Squatters with their like explosive neck collars and minders still got away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you got to have a sequel, you know.
For sure.
And at this point, I'm going to pause here, because this touches on a lot of other things. It touches on the history of outfits like the French Foreign Legion. It touches on the gray market of mercenary work. And we have some fellow conspiracy realists who are likely acquainted with some aspect of that world. We want to hear your thoughts, folks. What do you think the line is? Should criminals be permitted to join into a war in pursuit of a pardon? Does it depend on what kind of crimes they committed? Do you think that Putin and co. are going to play ball with a monstrous, monstrous individual? Let us know. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. We're not going to end on such a dark note. Never fear. We're going to talk about the future.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back. And guys, strap in. We are going for a real trip all the way over to Geneva, Switzerland, because we're going to visit the World Economic Forum 2023.
Almost, baby.
Yes. Yes. The Zuck is here, probably. I'm not sure if he is. I'm sure he is.
Oh, he's zucking up. He's out there. He's out there.
I was watching it earlier today because it's happening right now as we're recording this episode on the week of, what is it? It's January 18th right now, but all this week, the World Economic Forum is happening and they're live streaming all these things. So I got to listen to John Kerry earlier talking about ways to fix climate change.
You know who else is there? Freaking old Kemp.
Oh, and Kemp. Yeah.
Yeah, Governor Brian Kemp. Yeah, Governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, who's not exactly known for his like progressive ways of thinking, which is sort of what we associate places like the World Economic Forum with. But also, it's just kind of where the elite meet to have kind of closed door deal making sessions.
Yeah. Ooh. I hope George Bush was there, too. Fellow Skull and Bonesman. Kerry.
I like how down home and Texan folksy that Connecticut born. Scion of old wealth.
So folksy. I like it too, Ben. All right. Well, we are going there to discuss an open letter that was written recently to all of the attendees of Davos, the World Economic Forum, mostly the government officials and high-level executives that were attending, which is most of the people that were there, at least the speakers.
Check out our episode 2 where we talk about some of the security that goes down in Davos. It's kind of nuts.
Weird stuff. Yeah, check it out for sure if you don't know much about it. It's worth your time. But there's a reason this open letter was targeted to them and was put out right now as the World Economic Forum is occurring. It's because the message of this open letter is, hey, we writing this letter, we're a bunch of multimillionaires and even a few billionaires, and we want you, government officials, to tax us. Tax us right now. Tax us harsh, like tax us so hard. Just tax the crap out of us.
We've been bad global tax systems. Yeah.
But in order to save the world, that's the concept. Tax us and the rest of the ultra wealthy to save the world. Now, that sounds like a tall milkshake.
A delicious tall milkshake.
But it could be a real possible answer to kickstarting some of the things that can't happen right now because they simply can't get funding. So let's talk about it, guys. Let's talk about this letter, what it is, and what's said in here. And could it actually work? So I shared the open letter with you guys. I don't know if you want to go through any of it and actually read some of it out.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate this one because we talked a little bit about the nature of rhetoric in our episode on skepticism recently. And so these kind of declarations or manifestos, they always start with at least one thing everybody can agree on. We're living in an age of extremes. And they talk about how just like, absolutely terrible the world is right now for so many people and how it's going to get worse. But then they start talking about wealth extraction, the transfer of wealth from the majority to a incredibly powerful elite. And it's stuff that you hear other billionaires mention before. Warren Buffett's talked about it, I think. He mentioned he pays more taxes than his secretary. I don't know. You can see how people wouldn't trust this statement.
Sure. And the concept on its face, it seems very, you know, kumbaya and like, like something we don't really think would be a good idea. But doesn't it? And this is sad because I think it's not true for the opposite. Wouldn't this kind of require the consent of the super rich, essentially?
Well, that's maybe the whole thing. And that's why I wanted to bring it to today's episode, is because we have in this case 205 plus, because you can go in here and sign it as a wealthy person and add your name to the list. So maybe a lot of people have added to it since it was posted not that long ago. But the concept that there are at least 205 ultra wealthy people who want to do this, that's a good sign. How do you get enough of the ultra wealthy people or enough of the organizations that represent the ultra wealthy people to also sign up for this, right? To where it could actually occur. Because those ultra wealthy people have a lot of sway with the folks this open letter is written to, the political leaders who are attending Davos. Right. So it really is, as you said, Ben, in a way, just a here's a statement. We want you to know that we ultra wealthy people, I don't know, we see you non ultra wealthy people and we stand with you and we'll give you our money if the political leaders make us.
Right. Like, that's the thing. There's not a statement about the tremendous amount of influence that billionaires can have on government, right? Through any number of proxies or lobbying.
Well, that's why I use the word consent, because it's not like anyone's asking me how much tax I want to pay. And technically, you know, you shouldn't have to ask the super rich how much tax they should have to pay, but they can also literally kind of wreck the economy by pulling all their money out and, you know, moving to another country or something. I don't know. What's the concern with pissing off the super rich in this scenario? That's probably part of it.
I mean,
them taking their industries elsewhere. I don't know. What leverage do they have?
What leverage do
the super rich have? You know, I mean, like they operate companies in the United States. They obviously also have overseas divisions of their companies, and their wealth can be, you know, held overseas in, you know, offshore accounts and things like that. But if the government were to say, we're going to tax you, the super rich, what would be the super rich's move to say the hell you are?
Move their money.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm making sure I wasn't missing anything. Okay.
And then punish the people responsible for making those moves, right? Get them out of office.
Yes.
Smear them in the public.
I'm asking boneheaded
opinion,
questions because I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. Fellow boneheads. But no, it's interesting. So this is almost like a petition, kind of an open letter, where they've got some cosign from a handful, but that wouldn't be enough. It would need to be all of them, right?
Yeah, I don't know. You would just have to, there would have to be a political movement where enough supporters who could elect somebody support this movement, right? To where the political leader would then support it because that person knows they can get elected again for another term, no matter what the ultra wealthy people say. But those ultra wealthy people can sway an election no matter how many supporters they have. So it's just like, I think the risk involved as someone who's going to be a political representative, whether that's, you know, in a legislature or parliament or, you know, prime minister or president, I think the calculated risk is too high to go all in on something like this.
Yeah. Let's also note that there's a huge problem with the idea of philanthropy, right? The wealthy class, and it is true, the wealthy class has done a wonderful job gaslighting huge swaths of the global population into thinking that it's not good for people to pay their fair share of taxes and then work toward something that collectively improves a country. It's good to trust one or two very rich people to throw money at something they have identified as a problem. And remember, these are some of the most powerful people on the planet. They are not elected. They choose who you get to elect.
But Ben, don't those contributions also serve as tax breaks?
They do. They do. They serve as tax breaks. And then the question is, do you think, like, there's some really interesting discourse on this. I want to be fair to both sides because, look, if you live in the United States, you might say, well, okay, put yourself in the mind of Bill Gates. You say, I could start a charity and I can try to eradicate things like malaria or polio. Or I can take all the money I would have done and I can give it to Uncle Sam and say, hey, I know you spend a ton of money every year on a military that goes around the world, but I'd like you to think about malaria. You can't, just like we, like you said earlier, no, you can't choose how much you want to pay in taxes. We mentioned this in one of our tax activism episodes. You also can't dictate how your money is spent. Not directly.
No. And I always say I have no bloody idea where my tax money goes. Certainly isn't into my roads and bridges. Certainly not paying for my kids' education necessarily, or, you know, healthcare.
I agree with what we're talking about here. I have to mention a bit of information from Oxfam. Just you, if you don't know about them, you can check them out. OXFAM. They found a couple of things that I want to talk about. This is from The Guardian. They said food and energy companies had more than doubled their profits in 2022. So food and energy companies doubled their profits. They paid out $257 billion to shareholders at a time when more than 800 million people were going hungry. So that isn't saying shame on you for making money. It is look at the disparity between these two groups, right?
Right.
That's inequality within our society. Is there something we can do about that? Let's just go a little bit further here. Only 4 cents in every dollar of tax revenue comes from wealth taxes. And half the world's billionaires lived in countries with zero inheritance tax, which we've talked about on this show before, which is on the money that gets handed down, right? From a grandmother or a mother to a child, father to a child, that money doesn't get taxed often. A tax of up to 5% on the world's multimillionaires and billionaires could raise $1.7 trillion U.S. dollars a year, which theoretically would be enough to lift 2 billion people out of poverty if you could put all that money into a fund that was specifically focused on creating a plan to do that. Which goes to your point, Ben, it's very difficult to make a government, you know, take a certain amount of money, siphon it into one plan, and then make that plan come to fruition.
Yeah, and there's this other issue, too, that I keep coming back to. And pardon me if this sounds a little bit dismissive or cynical. Can't they just not put money in offshore tax havens? Can't you just stop paying an industry of people to help you avoid the taxes and the system that you inherently support? Like, why can't you just do that now? Who looked around and said, well, I can't fire my wealth estate management folks. They kept me out of the Panama Papers. What I need is to write a letter.
Yeah.
Which I don't know.
That's
a
little cynical, but
it's cynical.
You know.
It's cynical. We haven't met these people, so we can't speak. We can't speak with certitude about their motivations, their ambitions, or their sincerity. But still, it feels like it might be kind of a talk is cheap situation. I'm just being honest.
No, I agree that it feels that way. I want to give you guys one quote from an individual that's fascinating to me. There's this person's story is complicated, way more complicated than you will understand after reading one article. I recommend reading several. I'll tell you who they are after I read the quote. Quote, the whole world, economists and millionaires alike, can see the solution that is staring us all right in the face. We have to tax the ultra rich. If we care about the safety of democracy, about our communities, about our planet, we have to get this done. And yet our decision makers either don't have the gumption or don't feel the need to listen to all of these voices. It begs the question, what or who is stopping them? And this is a quote from Marlene Engelhorn, who's a co-founder of this little thing called Tax Me Now. She's one of the heirs to the BASF chemical company. It's a huge fortune, $4 point something billion, of which she gets, you know, a portion, but it's going to be many, many millions of dollars. And this is someone coming out and saying, like, I'm going to just be receiving this money from, you know, my family. Please tax me like a lot. I think her quote in a different place that I'd found said, tax me 90% of that money. I don't need that money. I didn't make that money.
Mm-hmm.
Put it to good use. But I think the big question to you listening right now is, giving it to your government wherever you live the best use of that money?
That's the question. Yeah, it's a great question too, Matt. That's the one I think, that's one of the big ones that we keep coming back to. You know, maybe a lot of innovation and success comes from reframing the way we ask a question or look at a problem. So without burning down the house or touching any third rails or making anybody salty with us, maybe money is the problem. Maybe it's the wrong religion.
It's entirely likely.
It's that whole free market economy, man. Like, you know, not to, you know, look, I know it works for a lot of people, but there are limits to what good it can do and what ill it can cause. Or maybe there aren't limits to what ill it can cause, but certainly feels like there's too much control in the hands of the super wealthy. And I think this sort of cinches it. The fact that we can't make something like this work.
Well, hey, we'll see. Maybe the folks at Davos solved it all. And by the time you're hearing this episode, right, we're in a utopia, because it's next week.
Yeah, we don't know, because like you, we can't go to Davos. and we don't get to choose who does get to go to Davos. And that is yet another inherently problematic thing about it. But again, we can't question their motives. I think that's, we can question them, we can interrogate them, but we can't say for sure what those motivations truly are or how sincere they may be. But it would be a better world if there was less wealth inequality, not no inequality at this point, just like less, just fewer billionaires. I love that old meme. It's always stuck with me, where they said, what we should do is put a limit on capitalism. If you get to the point where you make $1 billion, you get like a printed out plaque that says you won, and then you got to go start over. You know what I mean? Let's disincentivize becoming a billionaire. That's like you get to the end of a great video game and you can't keep going. You want to play again? You're back to level one. Never going to happen.
Well, hey, tell us what you think about all this stuff. Should serial killers, you know, convicted ones, get to go to war if they just want to? God, that's a weird one, Ben. That's so messed up. Should AI generated art have to deal with copyright? Oh my God, what are we gonna do? Or should the ultra rich just get taxed to oblivion, or Skyrim, or wherever?
Hey, I'm not saying it should even be to oblivion. You know, at the very least, just like, let's dispense with all the loopholes. It's costing us money.
Well, we want to hear your thoughts, and as always, we greatly appreciate everybody taking the time to check in. Let us know what is going on in your neck of the global woods. Talk to us about these ideas. Talk to us about episodes you'd like us to cover in the future. We can't wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Rumor has it there's a TikTok out there somewhere. Maybe there's a dating site profile. I have no idea. But find us on one of those and talk to us. And if you don't sip those social meds and have no fear, just give us a phone call.
1-833-STDWITK is the number to call. Leave a message. You got 3 minutes to tell us your tale. Give us your missive. And just make sure to let us know what to call you, preferably a cool nickname. And if we can use your voice on the show, and you may hear yourself on one of our weekly listener mail episodes. None of that does it for you. Why, you can get in touch with us the old-fashioned way. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.